sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Cyprus. Oracle gets smacked, Nike gets love. We have some things to discuss about currencies, and we're going to talk about markets and what's going on into the last week of March. All this and much more on episode number 306 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello and welcome. Andrew Horowitz here. It is the last week of March 2013. March 25th is the start of this week after we had one of the first weeks, actually the second week in a while, that markets were down in the U.S. and obviously across Europe. We had some real problems there due to the, you know, the uncertainty about what's going on with Cyprus. And while some people have said, well, what's the point? Who cares? I mean, we're talking about a pretty small country, and what's the big deal? We're going to go through some of that. We did discuss that a little bit with Das a couple of weeks back, but I thought it was really a good time to focus in on what are the issues and really why we should be concerned about Cyprus and to what level of concern that we need to have. But there are definitely signs that there is a question in terms of earnings on top of that when it comes to markets. And it's very interesting what we saw last week, because one of the big things that we were looking for last week was to see how well Oracle and FedEx did, because FedEx and Oracle being more of a business-related company, each of them, obviously Oracle, you know, databases and cloud and computer software, et cetera, and, you know, that really doesn't sell to the public per se. And FedEx, while it is publicly a company that really caters to the public as well, but also mainly businesses and also shipping for things like online purchases. And, you know, what we saw last week was two very significant disappointments when it came to those areas. So the areas that were really contained in the business side of things. FedEx came out and definitely guided down and were a big disappointment. And interestingly, what usually happens with FedEx is that they have been disappointing over the last several quarters. There are a couple of them that were better, but it, you know, nothing really fantastic, but yet the stock would drop overnight and then it would rise nicely throughout the next day or so and then be off to the races. This time it didn't happen. Now, Oracle also has been beating pretty nicely over the last several quarters, and they've had a pretty real, you know, relatively good outlook. They missed miserably. They missed on outlook. They missed on, you know, current earnings and EPS and revenues. And, you know, it was questionable about what the reasoning was. It seemed like from the conference call, a lot of analysts got that it was an internal issue with some of their product sales and their distribution, and, you know, others said, well, it was because a lot of places and governments put off purchases till after the first of the year, and obviously that affected that quarter. But at the same time, whatever the excuse is and whatever is brought out as the quote-unquote silver lining from the conversation, the fact still remains that it really was pretty weak for both of those companies. Now, FedEx may have been also somewhat hampered by currencies, and they also may have had a problem due to maybe the cost of their fuel, but clearly package shipments were down significantly, and that was a big thing that, you know, that was looked at. Now, on the other hand, we saw two other companies in a different sector that did very well. We saw, for example, Nike come out with a number that beat expectations, and more importantly with Nike, what you look for is their future orders that are pending domestically and globally. And both of those numbers were much better than were expected and, quite frankly, a very good number. They had some really great, we'll call it pending, and orders that they see are actually coming in that they've booked already or, that you know, in terms of a sale that's going to happen. And those numbers look really, I got to tell you, surprisingly good compared to what we would think would be going on around the world. At the same time, Tiffany's, which may have been just a a beat on estimates, and everybody was kind of downtrodden with Tiffany's and the high-level retailers that were dealing in the jewelry business and, you know, costly items such as purses, et cetera, which have really come down. And Tiffany's looked like they did better. I would not put them in the same category as how good Nike looked, but Tiffany definitely beat. There was other things like Ulta, which is, Ulta fragrances, et cetera, the stores that sell the various products for women and men for, you know, whether it's beauty products for shampoos or makeup, et cetera. They really got crushed last week pretty hard. And I think there's an interesting trend that's kind of starting to set up here a little bit, or at least there's the beginnings of this, the kind of the inference that, you know, the business spending, the business side of things, the international business is kind of been, you know, kind of questionable. We know that Europe is still in a significant recession. We know that China has been kind of slowing, and then it came back a bit and kind of moderating at this point, still looking to keep inflation down and to control their kind of ever-expanding and ever-growing housing industry and residential and building industry because it's getting out of hand. We see that, of course, maybe there's some, maybe some of the business is going to Japan, if there's anything that's appropriate to go to Japan in terms of the business sector. And we talked a little bit about that with the company. Probably one of the best examples is Caterpillar. And Caterpillar has been under pressure ever since the yen started moving. And that was since, last November or so, it started really moving dramatically. But with the uncertainty that was occurring due to the situation with the sequester and now with Cyprus and slowdown of many different regions, it looks like that the businesses are taking a firmer tone to their outlook and actually combining what they say, what they believe, their sentiment with actually what they're doing, which consumers have not yet come up with that as a final resolution, because we did see that consumer confidence had been growing for some time, but then the University of Michigan a couple of weeks back really just fell off a cliff, we talked about. And maybe what's happening is that consumers are going to be the last to possibly catch on to the fact that, you know, things are changing a little bit here because, you know, they don't have maybe as much responsibility that a business would in terms of keeping their EPS up, where we can, as individuals, we can kind of, a little more credit, a little less credit, a little more spending, a little less spending. But at the same time, it doesn't seemingly have the same time frame. Now, the IMF, in a news item over the weekend, said that they are going to be reducing down their growth estimates for the U.S., which is kind of interesting, you know, and I think that makes a lot of sense because we are seeing that while there is hiring that is better and the bright spot of housing is better, at the same time, the manufacturing has slowed down on a regional basis, and we'll see what happens with the ISM index of, you know, manufacturing over the next couple of months here. But generally speaking, clearly has been a slowing manufacturing. Inventories are building, sales are slowing. Still holding up well, not doing anything dramatic and drastic, but at the same time, clearly slowing. So I want you to kind of think about that when we start talking about Cyprus in a minute, because, you know, the question is, you know, well, what does Cyprus have that is going to be causing any kind of effect, and why is it even bringing down our stock market? And is it just that or coincidence? You know, what exactly is happening there that I, as an individual investor, need to be concerned about? Or a consumer? Or just anybody in the U.S. at all? Businesses? Let me first mention that this episode of the Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored by GoToMeeting. And you know why they are? Because it's a great service. It's a great service to bring together your team in a way that you don't have to spend excessive money on travel and rooms and hotels and food and take time off from work, because what you have really is right in the middle of your office, you have a meeting center. GoToMeeting allows you to actually work with clients or coworkers spread across the globe at a fraction of the cost of what you would spend if you were to do it by, you know, getting together in person. And, you know, why do you get together in person? Well, because you can see each other. Well, GoToMeeting has obviously a very nifty little feature called HD video, and you could very simply just not only share your screen with a PowerPoint presentation or documents and kind of work back and forth on a whiteboard, but you can actually see each other face-to-face. Cool stuff. Now, what's nice about this and what's great about GoToMeeting is that they give you a 30-day free invitation to have a trial with all the bells and whistles. And all you have to do is go to gotomeeting.com, click on the try it free button, and use the promo code podcast. And you get 30 days of just absolutely all the GoToMeeting that you can use. And it's wonderful to check it out that way to see what kind of, you know, how you can apply the use of this type of system where you don't have to, fly around or meet somebody a certain time that would require an extra, 20, 30 minutes of travel each way. Great, great product. GoToMeeting.com, get your 30-day free trial. Wonderful stuff. And by the way, while we're talking about free trials, the Trigger Point Research Equity Alerts, which we just closed a position on Mellanox for about a 13% gain in a matter of, 2 or 3 days. Caterpillar, we are still have a position on, and I won't mention all the other ones, but that we have positions on. But basically what we do is we send you out an email alert or a text alert and tell you, hey, this stock is breaking out. You know, you may get 2 or 3 a week. You may get 2 a day. You may get nothing for 5 days, 6 days. But we tell you exactly what the stops are, exactly what the targets are, the whole rationale behind the trade. And you could try it free for 14 days. 2 weeks of total free Trigger Point Research alerts. Just go to triggerpointresearch.com/subscribe and just click that little button there that has the equity alert trial for 14 days. And also we have commodity alerts where it actually now will trade your account at a particular broker of your choice. And what happens is when we send the signals out, those also hit a system that allows for accounts that are attached to it to automatically trade. Last week we had on Thursday, we did a trade long, I think it was Thursday, for soybeans, and it was 14 points profit overnight. And if you know how commodities work and you know how contracts work, that was a nice chunk of change for anybody that had a subscription to Commodity Alerts. So that's also on the site on triggerpointresearch.com. You can check that all out. Really cool stuff. I encourage you really to, if you haven't been involved in commodities before, check it out. Something you want to look at. And TPR Equity Alerts, awesome to add to your portfolio diversification as ideas are generated on a regular basis. All right, so let's talk about currency for a second. Just a short little blip on currency issues that are going on around the world. There seems to be more ground rumbling with regard to the, how Japan has been, dropping the value of their yen, although they say it's not anything they're doing. It's just the market reacting to policy initiatives, which, by the way, really haven't been a lot of policy initiatives unless you count the endless amount of comments coming from Japanese officials who are constantly talking about their potential, unlimited slash quantitative easing slash policies that will bring inflation up to a 2% level, which would be quite amazing and quite powerful, because what that would do is pretty much bring the dollar up substantially, do a real, have kind of a wrecking ball effect on the other Asian countries around them, and would make their products and exports that much more, not only less expensive, but much more competitive in the world market. Now, that's good. I mean, I guess that is something that they really want to do. And they're, doing this whole yen devaluation under the guise of increasing inflation to, really bring the economy to the next level of, or just break them out of the deflationary trend that has been there for a couple of decades. But at the same time, starting to see, even though the G20 came out with a kind of a finger pointing, hey, we shouldn't be doing that, they never really identified Japan. And with that, what happened was that there was a green light for traders to, move the yen, moved it to as high as close to about 96, which is actually low. It's upside down against the dollar. And what that meant was that Korea started getting kind of apoplectic. They're saying, wait a minute. They're really moving the yen quite dramatically here, whether it's traders, whether it's the government, whoever it is. And what's happening is it's based on, obviously, the commentary of Japan and their direction. But you know what? That's really getting to be somewhat out of control, because what's happening is that our cars are no longer competitive comparatively. We're having difficulty selling anything to Japan because the price of our currency is moving up. And we really object to this. And this is kind of starting to get around the Asian countries, and we're starting to see more and more conversations pop up that there is a need to do some restraint on the amount of movement here, because we all know that even though it is being said to be under, you know, the guise of reviving the inflationary concept in the markets and really just a fiscal type of move, it really is designed to really hit the yen. And that being the case, you know, that is really a big problem, because you start getting into competitive currency devaluations, currency wars, currency, you know, worries, whatever you want to call it. And that ends up being a protectionism type of situation, where then the next country may come and say, you know what, we're not going to work the currency. What we're going to do is we're going to put a tariff on any products that are brought in from your country. So the problem is that, you know, there is only so far that markets and officials will allow this to go before they get involved in it. And there's only so far maybe the dollar can go, which, if you've watched the dollar value, the Dixie, over the last several months, it's been on a progressive trend higher, which is really interesting, because when you look at the assets that are really affected by and directly affected by the U.S. dollar, like, for example, gold and oil, silver, you know, oil hasn't seen any break. As a matter of fact, to my amazement, on Friday it moved higher. We've been shorting oil throughout the intraday for our portfolios and doing pretty well. Although Friday we saw it kind of reverse around from an important support point and said, you know what, let's pull that trade so we don't get any problem. You know, it just kept on rising throughout the day, when the optimism about the deal that was going to happen in Cyprus would be just an amazing thing and blow over, and, you know, we just start moving oil up because the animal spirits were back and the risk on trade could be back. And even though that oil supplies and demand doesn't equal the price, you know what, so what, we'll buy into it because, you know, kind of everybody will be buying things in general. Now, again, the big issue here is, you know, how is this real kind of diversion from the dollar value where it is and what's happening with oil? It's kind of an interesting situation. Again, my thesis has always been that, you know, you start selling the yen, you start looking for other assets to buy as a kind of on the other side of the trade, you buy the dollar, and that's good for foreign investors who are investing in the U.S. markets, because what's happening is not only are they getting the benefit of the rise recently in U.S. stocks, but they're also getting the benefit of the rise of the U.S. dollar. So let's just say that the dollar has risen, let's just give a number, 2% over a period of time. Markets have risen another 2% over that same period of time. Well, really, if you're a foreign investor and you invested in the U.S. stocks in dollars from your currency, you have a total 4% return on your money, the currency appreciation as well as the stock appreciation. Pretty cool. But the problem comes in, like we saw last week, where when Abe came out and said from Japan that, you know, we're going to do all this and, you know, this is my first speech and this is the implementation, that's going to happen, and nothing actually happened, the yen turned around pretty sharply and dropped about 1% overnight, and that took down the Nikkei by about 2.5% that day, because obviously a lot of the pricing that is involved in the Japanese stocks is really at its core based on the value of the yen and how much profitability can be increased by a much lower yen. We're seeing already many companies throughout Japan talk about how their profitability is going to be a lot higher. And a lot of that comes from just a currency conversion component, but some of it comes from the fact that they're more competitive and selling more products, which, again, just to restate this point, is why we are short Caterpillar. While there may be global demand out there, the question is going to be, where do I buy my truck from? Where do I buy the dump truck, the backhoe, the bulldozer, the crane, whatever I'm using? And if you have two similar products and you can buy one from Japan at maybe a 10, 12% discount and one from Caterpillar, what can Caterpillar do? Well, they can compete and drop their price. Well, that's not good for them. They cannot compete and, you know, the business goes over to the Japanese companies, let's say. Well, that's not good for them. So what's good for Caterpillar? Well, not much. The mining business, when gold prices are higher, maybe there's going to be some more product purchases. Well, that's not good because gold prices, gold prices are lower. So all in all, when you look at the whole dynamic of what's happening right now and you look at Caterpillar, there's not much that you can really hang your hat on that is really a great thing for the company. And in addition to that, who knows how much currency exposure they have, that's going to be a problem as well with products they sell somewhere else. So you add it all up, and that's a real problem for them. And that goes on with many companies when this kind of situation starts to get a little out of control. And I do wonder how long the U.S. is going to put up with this kind of situation, or if they just have to shut their mouths and suck it up, because that's what they tried to do for many years as well. We tried to do for many years as well. So we're still kind of leaning on the long side of the yen, looking at for it to strengthen again. If there is any global hiccup, whether it's something in Europe or somewhere else around the world, you know, you may see a lot more of an upside there, especially now without any significant amount of implementation of a program. And maybe some of the movement that was based on the rhetoric and the hope for a program, you know, in March, maybe even April, kind of shut down a little bit right now by Japan. The other thing is that you have to look at, you know, what's going on in emerging markets. And right now we saw, for example, Colombia did a 50 basis point surprise reduction in their Fed, you know, their core rate. We're seeing that Israel is stating that there's going to be a further slowdown and that they can't support, in their opinion, the outlook that they had per se. A lot of Latin America is suffering because the dollar has strengthened so dramatically. And, you know, in a way it could be good, but it's just throwing things really off right now. And that's what happens when you experiment with a situation that, you know, you really don't know what the outcome is going to be depending on how hard you press on it. There is no real significant amount of, I guess, a path and a proven roadway that you can use to figure out how much you're going to, if you press down on the currency this much, what's going to happen on the other side, aside from pissing off a lot of people around the world and a lot of governments. But I'm talking about the effects, kind of like a, think about the butterfly effect. You know, you're doing something over here and what's the, you know, the effects on the other side. It may be good for your stocks. For a short term, it may be really good for your economy for the short term, but what does it do to the rest of the world? And then how does that then play back into your economy? So I think, you know, kind of summing this up, and I've talked about this before, we're still kind of like inching in and playing the long side here because while the Japanese markets, in terms of their economy, I should say, are really weak and their exports have been horrible and all that, you know, there's going to be a time when it starts to strengthen a little bit only because of the fact that they pushed the yen down so hard. And when that time does come, there is the potential for a very swift reversal of this because there's so many people on that side of the trade. Now, I guess we have to talk about Cyprus because, like I said, there's been a lot of questions, a lot of bit of banter over the weekend. It was ridiculous how much the various, you know, mucky mucks in Europe were coming out with all sorts of gobbledygook that was very difficult to understand. Bottom line is this. But Cyprus is, first of all, it's a small country. I mean, it's very small. I mean, not only in size, but in the economy itself. Really an insignificant piece of a global, much less, you know, U.S.-based economy that really has any effect per se. It's really a bigger issue, though. It's a continuation of the very bad practice policy that was put into place in creating the single and unified currency many years ago, allowing for countries that did not have a quality level of business practices, if you will, to go into this, and then the potential for the other countries that are in there, particularly strong countries like Germany and France, is probably all that we can say right now, of all the countries, maybe a couple more, but basically that allowed them to come in for the benefit, frankly, of Germany, because they really were able to do a tremendous job at creating an export business, and they didn't have to worry about currency exchange rates, et cetera, and cross-border issues. And they allowed certain countries in that were poorly managed, that had bad business practices, and that really weren't qualified because whether they didn't properly put down all the aspects of their true underlying economic and I guess it would be taxation slash revenue models, or whether or not it was just that they never would have a good model even if they did put it down, is something that Europe needs to be faulted with. Now, they're trying to keep this together at all costs. Of course they are, because, again, a breakup is just a very, very difficult situation for 100 different reasons. One of them being that if any country does leave, and of course you got to then extract out their valuation, you got to change out the currency, you got banks and investors and sovereigns invested in that country, and you got to then figure out, well, where are the losses, and then you got to figure out how does it all rebalance. It's just a real disaster when it comes to a country pulling out, even as small as Cyprus. Now, Cyprus, again, always had a really bad overall structure where the banking system was not only large but multiple times larger than their economy to begin with. Maybe we'll fault them for the money they took in, the type of loans they gave out, the, again, the business practices that they had. But in the end, what is happening is more so about the concern that there is some kind of change to the ECB and the EU overall when they are dealing with this particular bailout. Whereas in other bailouts, there was money that was given to the countries, and then there was some, you know, crazy thing that went on that it couldn't go directly to the banks. And if the banks then didn't get it, we'd pass it through the countries that would give it to the banks. And there was all sorts of, you know, things that went on behind the scenes to help out the banks in the end. But the issue right now is that Cyprus does not have the funds at all to help bail out the banks, which are in imminent bankruptcy is you know, kind of on the table here. They don't get money on this done before the weekend in a way that is acceptable. What's going to happen is that you're going to have a bankruptcy of the banks because the ECB said they're going to cut off funding, the traditional funding, because why should they keep giving money to a bankruptcy situation? So what they did was they said, hey, Cyprus, you know what? We appreciate the fact that you did money and you're part of the EU, so we're going to give you some money, but we want to make sure that you have some, you know, kind of some skin in the game. So approximately $5 billion, give or take. And by the way, mark my words, by the end of this deal, it's supposed to be, what, $15, $17 billion that they need? It's going to be higher. Let's just, you know, because what's gone on in the last couple of weeks and the freezing of bank accounts, only allowing maybe 100 euros to be taken out per day for some people, and the lack of any business going on, the high unemployment, the riots, you know, the lack of business being done, all that is going to, culminate into a much bigger problem. You're also going to have run on the banks potentially, even though there's going to be, even if there is a, you know, structured bailout of some sort. So in the best case scenario, it's going to require more money. The worst case scenario, there's going to be a problem. There's going to be some bankruptcies going on. Now, already what they have agreed to, they were strong-armed into, is to saying that, yes, they will put a levy on depositors. Now, here's really where the crux of the issue is. You know, historically, when these bailouts all occurred and have been occurring in Spain and Italy, et cetera, there was some haircuts maybe in Greece on some bonds, and there was some haircuts on some institutional, but there was never money taken from depositors. And more importantly, there was never even the specter that we would see that any insured depositors like the FDIC would be taken advantage of either. Well, the first round of all this happened, and what happened was that Cyprus had to come up with money, so they figured they clipped the depositors. There's nowhere else to get any money. So they were going to clip the depositors, and they were going to take at the time it was 7% or so of the accounts under 100,000 euros and over 100,000 euros. It was going to be like 9%. Well, everybody got crazy about that and freaked out. So what did they do? Well, now what they're going to do, they said second round, is yes, we're going to do something, but we're really going to take on the accounts that are over 100,000 euros, and the insured depositors and pension plans are not going to get clipped. Oh, okay. So now they need to take, I don't know, 20, 30%, because you have to add that back to the higher levels of that money from the people over 100,000 euros. And that's not good, because now you take out their, you know, 30%, 20%, and they say, thanks so much. I'm taking the rest of my money out. I'm not staying around, you know, to find out what the next chapter in this story is. So now all of a sudden you have potentially a run on the bank. Not to mention the fact that you can create a run on the bank by saying that the best way to do it is just to say you can't get your money. That freaks people out. And that just starts a massive run. So There's going to be losses. Britain, UK talks about $1.7 billion of losses to whether it's bonds and banks, deposits, et cetera. There's going to be losses for individuals that have any money in the Cyprus-based banks. Some banks are going to put in the bad bank, some keep in the good bank, and there's going to be further cuts, and it's going to throw the economy into a real tizzy. So again, what is the problem? Why are we concerned about this? Again, the concern is not so much about what happened necessarily to Cyprus. It's the concept that this, the discussion has changed from easy free money to, hey, you screwed up, you got to participate in the fix. Maybe this is just a test. If you're going to test anybody, I think we talked about this on DH Unplugged, why not test the smallest country with the smallest economy and see how this plays out? Kind of throw up that trial balloon and float the idea out there and see how markets react. Well, markets reacted pretty poorly. The euro really got crushed for a couple of days there. On Friday, it came back because there was a lot of banter about they're much closer and things are going to get better and there's going to be, some kind of a vote that's going to happen, et cetera. And now the timetable that everybody's looking for, of course, is naturally, they've all talked about all weekend is Sunday night. They need to do something by Sunday night because Monday, I guess at the stroke of midnight or midnight plus 1 second, the funding is going to be cut off if there is no agreement. And right now, the problem is that there is a gigantic argument that has been going on with, first of all, how are they going to get the money? Where are they going to get the money from? And how can they actually do such a horrible thing to their people? The officials from Cyprus went to Russia, said, hey, a lot of the money that is down here is from you, your people. A lot of big money is in our banks for all sorts of reasons. What are we going to do? Well, Russia's like, well, sorry, we really can't help you in that circumstance. Although there is some discussion about the oil assets, the commodities of Cyprus being used as collateral for something down the road, like, if 5 years we can't pay you back your money, you'll get a piece of this, this rig. Or maybe you'll be backed in oil revenue or, whatever it may be. But that, again, is really bad because then the country itself doesn't have the potential to do anything to give reforms to benefit their economy, and they would have to do something like raise further taxes. I mean, it goes on and on and on. Not to mention the potential losses. Now, the other thing that's kind of hanging in there is that if, in fact, Cyprus doesn't agree to the terms and bankruptcy ensues, what's going to happen with them in terms of being in the EU or not? Can we continue, as thought by maybe some of the EU participants, ECB and Germany, can we continue to have a country that is basically failing? Interesting discussion. I think more importantly, the discussion of, how they're going to deal with the fact that the assets in Cyprus, even the euros, and have been severely, severely reduced in value. And that's a big problem for, Cyprus involved and the Eurozone itself. Because you have now not only, a situation like Greece, but you have a situation like Greece times 100, not in size, but in theory and in potentially having them, have a real problem with their economy. So while the euro kind of danced around and drove up pretty nicely on Friday and with the optimism, that's hot money. Those one-day moves are hot money. And if this deal does not go through, and if in fact there is some kind of default, I think we're going to see a further downside for the euro, and we're going to see the world really, for at least the short term, say, you know what? This euro situation, this experiment really didn't work, and who knows what's going to happen after the fact with other countries if they get into trouble. So that's really the focus of all this right now is, again, the concept of what the ECB and the European zone is doing in terms of their hard line, especially in Germany's hard line, that they're just not willing to, give any benefit anymore. They kind of gave. Okay, well, finally somebody's going to have to say it's enough. You're going to have to fix your own situation. We're not going to continually just keep on giving money from our economy, which is doing pretty well, which there are a huge amount of the the money into the various modes, the LTRO or the funds. And by the way, you're already hearing that the ECB is talking about that's going to be, you know, potentially unlimited LTROs or unlimited liquidity that's going to be unleashed into their economy if, in fact, Cyprus does default. Kind of interesting. They won't give that extra money to Cyprus, but they will give it to the other countries and the other banks and the other kind of financial institutions within the Eurozone that still have major problems and haven't seen any reform to prevent them from going down, but willing to kind of let this one go. It's a fascinating, fascinating discussion and a fascinating experiment on an experiment that, frankly, I always thought back into the early days when it was first conceived that it was going to be a gigantic problem. And the main reason is that you have the inability for individual countries to really do much with their currency. And that's how they really set, when they set rates, currencies move, and their economies, when they get weak, the currency gets weak. When it gets strong, it gets strong. You have a very bifurcated situation there when it comes to the economic strength of many of these countries, and it just doesn't work together. So Cyprus is going to be on the radar, and we have to see how it plays out, particularly with some of the countries like Greece and Italy and Spain and Portugal, and find out really what the reaction there is going to be to any of the results from this, whether or not Cyprus, in fact, does agree and does come up with this slashing of some of the depositors and bringing up the money that way and increasing tax, et cetera, or if, in fact, they don't, they default and they pull out. It's going to be a very interesting study to see what happens over the next couple of weeks with these various countries, because it really is going to set the stage for what may be a kind of resurgence of the European concern again. And frankly, we know that they haven't done much to change anything in their ways. They just got a lot of money, and that kind of satisfied some of the balance sheets. And their companies are, while they may, many of them may be beating on estimates, the fact is that the entire area is continuing to seep into a recession. The recession has been going on for some time with really no significant way out, unless maybe they go for quantitative easing of some sort and drop their euro down so significantly that their exports will pick it up. But again, that's going to really benefit primarily, at least the majority of that will benefit Germany in this whole situation. Now, switching gears again, let's talk about what's going to be really important next week, aside from Cyprus. I think one of the biggest things we're going to see is we have this last week, coming on the last week of the month, and what that often is a window dressing time. We also have, at the same time, because it's March, it's the end of the quarter. Now, usually you know this, at that time, what we find is we see the durable goods numbers coming out. I'll tell you about that. Case-Shiller home numbers, consumer confidence from the conference board, some GDP numbers on a revised basis. So let me give you an actual kind of rundown of what we're going to be looking at next week. So we have two important, well, semi-important, they're really not the most important, but two important manufacturing numbers coming out. We have the Chicago Fed and Dallas on Monday. Now, Tuesday, we have the durable goods. Durable goods are expected to increase by about 3.9% after they dropped almost 5.5% last period. But we're going to see a big drop of the capital goods orders, non-defense, excluding aircraft. That's kind of the one that we've been looking at, that you want to look at, core. Looking for about a 1% drop, where it was up 6.3% last month. The Case-Shiller 20 composite, the 20-city composite year-over-year number, which is the one we want to look at, will also be out that day. And we're looking for about a 7.85%, according to analysts, which is up from 6.84%, which means that your housing values have increased 7.85% on average in those 20 cities over the last year. That's good. That's probably what we're going to continue to see for a little while as the housing prices go up. And this is the whole theory behind inflation. As housing prices go up, well, of course, what you get is that people want to buy because they don't want to miss out and have this thing run up, and then you're kind of out of luck. So the inflationary pressure, because of low mortgages on houses and because of some of the supply that has been diminished, is actually helping housing prices right now. That's good. We're going to see the Richmond Fed Manufacturing Index also that day. New home sales, lots of home data coming out. Got new mortgage applications the following day, pending home sales. GDP revised is going to be coming out on Thursday. And let's see, we're looking at about a 0.9 is what they're looking at for a price index. Personal consumption, 2.1. GDP annualized, looking to increase that to a 0.5. Now, remember, that was a negative 0.1. Then it was changed to a 0.1. Now they're looking for a 0.5 on GDP for the third reading of GDP. Initial jobless claims have been trending much better. Right now, we're looking at about 340,000. They've been in the 330s, 340s, 350s, but much better than where it was at 380 for some time there. Then we have personal income and spending coming out on Friday, and we're looking for personal income to be an increase of about 0.9% after it dropped about 3.6% last month, one of the biggest drops in a very long time, and personal spending up about 0.6 from 0.2. Now, we'll see how that plays out. I'm kind of curious how that's going to work. And we have the final reading of the University of Michigan. It was 71.8, a very big drop from the last reading where we saw the previous month, which is about 77, and expectations were to see about a 78, and we saw that 71.8 come in. This time we're looking for a slight increase to 72.7 on the University of Michigan as a revised final reading. So there's a lot of things that are coming up that really shape the markets aside from Cyprus. Earnings season's kind of coming to a close here. There's been some discussion about maybe some lawsuits with Microsoft, and there's some things happening with Apple, and the BlackBerry came out last week, and you can look at that. One of the things I'm looking at is the potential for a fall of Netflix. Now, Netflix is right on the edge of a important support area, both on its daily and weekly charts. And if you look at it, we'll call it about 179 is important, but 176 is really key. Drops below 176 is a gigantic hole, a fast zone underneath that really could be filled, and that's going to provide a very significant opportunity if you were to look at either puts or shorting the position. Now, it's still just ever so slightly, a little early, but the competition against Netflix, whether it's from Apple, whether it's from Comcast that recently came out with a free open weekly deal that, you know, I think it was last weekend or the weekend before, was competing against Netflix direct head-on-head. Or, you know, there's a lot of players out there that are continuing to put a lot of pressure on this company. And while the company has gone up dramatically this year, oftentimes you see what's called a back and fill, and where we're going to see some money being taken off the table if things don't work. And again, mark your chart at the 176 level on Netflix, because if it does in fact break down from there, it could be a substantial slide moving beyond that. Caterpillar, I mentioned to you as well, is something that is to be watched. It's kind of hanging out right at, you know, a level that is, it could be considered support, and it's of course part of the Dow, and it's one of those loved stocks that can't do any wrong, and someday in the future will be better, so it doesn't matter the price, we'll buy it, according to probably many of the mutual fund managers who have to be in a core position that is somewhat related to the S&P 500 and the Dow. So, you know, keep an eye on that as well, and watch what goes on with those stocks. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac did some, you know, they're kind of nothing these days, but the stock's moving like crazy. I will say also one of my favorite ideas, not my favorite short per se, is AIG. Now, we like it as a short, by the way, but it is interesting that they are held the largest amount of holdings of any stock that overtook Apple recently. Now, oftentimes when you see hedge funds holding a substantial position and betting on one side, you know, you want to start thinking about the other side, because when they exit or when they enter, it depends on how you want to look at it, there oftentimes is a pretty significant move, penguin style. Like one jumps, they all start jumping. Now, AIG has potentially some exposure because of the insurance component and maybe, you know, some of their derivatives to the Cyprus situation. So depending on how that plays out and how we see the peripheral countries of Europe react to that, you could see the potential for AIG to really come down. Now, if, of course, everything is just all hunky-dory and fine, maybe AIG does pick up a little bit and becomes a decent play, and there is some more buying that goes into that. But until we see the results of how really this all comes down and affects all the other countries and investor sentiment and the bonds of those other countries, the banks, the financial institutions, the whole sovereignty situation, and whether or not there's going to be a true default, which we haven't really seen. There'll be some kind of a partial default or a... They come up with funny names, don't they? With the whole thing with Greece, when they were trying to prove that it wasn't a default when it really was. They'll come up with some funky name to say that this is a structured default or an implicit, directed, non-default default or some crap like that. You'll see. It's going to be out there. But nonetheless, this is something that you want to take a look at. AIG also has an interesting short. And then keep your eye on some of the tech stocks, some of the names like that have been falling and coming up and then falling. Like a Mellanox, one that we were long recently for a few days. I mean, it gets those spurts that it goes up and down, but there's some things happen in Israel. This is an Israeli-based. And in the smartphone area and in the device area that could be, you know, considered questionable. The stock looks awful, by the way. And then also like a Triple D that's been kind of coming back up. And a Silica, U.S. Silica, which I've mentioned many times before, is SLCA. And Triple D being DDD in the 3D printing space. A couple of stocks, lots of stocks to take a look at. With that, we're going to end it a little bit earlier than usual today. And we're going to talk about some of the things coming up. We had some great guests on recently, and we have a couple more lined up over the next several weeks that I think are going to be just awesome. And we're going to get back Frank Curzio. That's somebody I need to talk to. We've talked about actually doing a show together, and I got a lot of response from people when I kind of tweeted that and said, hey, what do you think of this? And by the way, if you want to follow us on Twitter, just at Andrew Horowitz, one word. And you can make sure to follow all the commentary throughout the day, the sarcasm that I give when it comes to some of the BS we hear out of Europe and some of our Fed officials, as well as the first take on the podcast, because you get the tweet immediately when the podcast goes up, as well as any of our stories, analysis, ideas, etc. So at Andrew Horowitz, just make sure to add that to your Twitter right away. Well, thanks so much for joining me. We'll see you soon. I hope you have a profitable week. And I'm looking forward to seeing what's going to happen next week with the outcome of whatever happens with Cyprus. Should be very interesting. Bye-bye. I'll see you soon.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.